We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So one of the local beat writers is now saying that Tommy Rees to Alabama is official, and that Notre Dame players have been informed. So that is official. So it's kind of what we expected, Ryan, but it is now official that that is happening, that he is taking that job.
Okay.
So we can now talk about it in a little bit different detail now moving forward. So
we can.
So we'll bring up the next question. So just want people to kind of have that is official. I'm going to reach out to my sources here and make it official. So, but the people that are reporting it, it's legit. Yeah, so it's official. Yep. Yeah. So here we go. Ryan, here's an interesting one that I want you to get to first, and then I'm going to give my opinion on it. This is from Ken Woodard. If we need a new OC, what about Utah OC Andy Ludwig? He has a balanced run pass with a physical run game. Seems like a good fit.
I think, Ken, I did a lot of research actually on Andy Ludwig last night because I think that a lot of what you're saying, I agree 100% with. He's a very versatile offensive coordinator in the sense that he's had pretty good tight ends over the last couple of years. He's had Dalton Kincaid and then the Brent Keith kid, who's a pretty solid football player that was hurt, unfortunately, this year. So he's played a lot of 12 personnel. He's been able to kind of do a lot of 11 personnel stuff as well and been pretty versatile with it. And I think the things that I like about Andy Ludwig is that, yes, he has a big emphasis on running the football. Like, we've always seen that from him over the last few years with the Tavian Thomases of the world, right? As far as the big power based running scheme. And I do think there's some multiplicity to the running scheme for Utah as well. Like, I don't think it's just a power based system where you're just a gap scheme. Like, I think he does have some zone implements in there. I think I've definitely seen some outside zone from the system as well. So I think there's some multiplicity to how he uses the offensive scheme. I think he likes to get tight ends involved, which I like, but he isn't so overly dependent on tight ends that you're just a 12 personnel and that's all you're going to do, right? And Andy Ludwig is also a quarterback guy, and he's done a pretty good job with developing those quarterbacks. I would argue that Cameron Rising's not an incredibly talented quarterback, but he's gotten a lot out of him out of the last 2 years because I think that he is a good quarterback coach and a really good offensive mind. So Andy Ludwig is a guy that I would definitely entertain. There's no doubt. Like, I probably would even make the phone call personally. Again, not saying that Marcus Freeman necessarily will, but he's a guy that I have seen his name out there before. I've been impressed with what he's done. I think he's gotten a lot out of the Utah staff in general, Utah roster in general, I should say, because I don't think it's a crazy talented roster, but they've been a good program. They've been highly productive for what they've had from a talent perspective. And I think Andy Ludwig brings a lot to the table. I do.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I like this hire, Ryan, because one thing I like to look at with coaches, and it's not a direct reflection of them.
Yep.
You know, it's or I shouldn't say direct reflection. It's not an end all be all because it doesn't tell the entire story. Yep. But I kind of looking at okay, what were they before you got there? And Utah before he got there was a team that was really about, you know, defense and running the ball, and they were good. I mean, they. You know, you look at the 3 years before he got hired, they were 29.8 points per game. They were 29.5 points per game, 28.1 points per game. They were 430 offense, 413-4, 395.8. And then his 4 years there, they went to 429, 409, 431.5, and then 466.9 this year in total offense. And then from points, they immediately jumped into 32.3 his first year, 30.2 during the COVID year, 36.1 by year three, and 38.6 by year four. And with all due respect, Cameron Rising's just an okay player.
Exactly.
And he's got a lot out of him.
Yep.
They haven't had a lot of high-level NFL players that they've been producing. They haven't put a bunch of offensive linemen out, a bunch of receivers, and a bunch of running backs out. They're just a really well-coached team that shows very good balance. And so, you know, to me, that matters. You know, the proof is in the pudding. And the fact is they've won the Pac-12 championship each of the last 2 years, and their defense has been good, but it hasn't been great. It hasn't been as good as some of their past defenses. That's for darn sure. So that impresses me, Ryan. It really does. I mean, I really like coaches that are balanced. And this year they passed for 3,489 yards. They rushed for 3,047 yards. With a quarterback that's good, you know, he passed for 3,000 yards this year, 26 touchdowns, 8 picks, 64.7% completion rate, which is solid. You know, last year was split up. They didn't throw it as well last year because, you know, it was Rising first year. And again, he's just an okay player. Running game was not as good this year as it was last year from the standpoint of the consistency because of the health. You know, Tavion Thomas was banged up. You know, Jackson was dinged up a little bit. And so then this year, you know, you lost TJ Pledger off last year's team. And then you come out this year with all of that and you still run for about the same number of yards, 217.6. Last year's 217.2. You know, but this year they were 5.4 per carry. Last year they were 5.6. So it wasn't quite as effective, but the numbers were still good because they protected it better, where they threw the ball a little bit better and they altered how they threw the football. So, you know, in some of those regards, and these are things just me off watching him. I haven't really broken the film down yet, Ryan, to the degree where I could have a say as to why. But one thing I noticed about Utah in this last 2 years that you can say for certain is take the scheme part out of it. They had a very limited quarterback, very smart but limited quarterback, but they were physical and they were balanced and they were well coached. You could see that, Ryan. Now, I got to break the scheme down to see if it fits, but here's what I do also know. He's an old-school pro-style guy. He's coached for Jeff Tedford. Yep. He's a pro-style guy, so there would be a smooth scheme transition, in my opinion, for the most part, into that. Yep. But, yeah, he's done a good job. And, look, he kicked USC's butt twice this year, and they kicked Oregon's butt twice last year. And yep. That says something to me, and he's been a part of that, in my opinion.
Well, I think the key thing that you hit on, too, Brian, is that he's been really successful with – pretty average talent, in my opinion, right? I mean, like, Dalton Kincaid's a good football player for sure. He'll play in the NFL. But I mean, Cameron Rising's is not a guy that's going to be drafted highly next year. He's not. I mean, wide receiver wise, they don't really have a guy that stands out. Like number 17, I forget his name. He's a good little player. Offensive line wise, they've had guys like Nick Ford who are borderline NFL players, right? Brayden Daniels at offensive tackle. It's not an incredibly talented group, but it is incredibly well coached. And I think that the biggest thing for me is that they're a versatile team. You know, like they can run a lot of 12 personnel. They can run a lot of 11 personnel. They can be multiple with how they attack things. So, Andy Ludwig would be a guy that I would have some interest in personally. I don't know if Notre Dame will, but I would have interest. I can say that.
He's another guy that's definitely on my list. There's no doubt about it. Rob Didoff says, IB crew, I wanted to change up all the Tommy talk for a second. Brian and I grew up in the 80s. What was your favorite part of the 80s? Mine was riding my bike with friends, less worries, and Indy Natty. Man, I'll tell you what, best part of the 80s, I mean, there's so much. The music was great. I'll leave politics out of it. I was a Broncos, Notre Dame, and Boston Celtics fan, and the 80s were pretty good. Broncos played in 3 Super Bowls. Celtics won 3 titles, played in several other finals. Notre Dame won a title. It was the golden era of the Brian Driscoll fandom as far as sports. The Reds were good. They won their World Series in 90. So it was like right after the 80s, but they were still good. You had those eras. So, yeah, I mean, sports was great during the 80s for me, man. But it was a simpler time. You know, I mean, that's a big part of it. You know, I mean, you played outside. You only had a limited number of channels. You know, the Nintendo was – I mean, I remember growing up playing Nintendo, but just playing sports and just being outside all the time, riding your bike everywhere. You know, whose net are we hooping up on today? You know, just all those things were a great time. You know, just I feel like the world was so simpler, A, because I was young, and the world's always simpler when you're young. And I just think sometimes the technology is so great in some ways. I mean, like right now. But in other ways, you just kind of wish you could turn it off and not feel like you were going to be screwed if you turn your phone off for an hour.
Dependent upon it, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. And so I miss some of that. I do. I'm not going to lie. I miss some of that. I miss the days where there weren't as many options on things. I'm not going to lie to you. But, I mean, those are some of the things that about the 80s that I miss.
Do you miss did you have a pager in the 80s too?
No, man, pagers weren't around just yet. That's more of when in the 90s when I was in high school. So I definitely had a pager in high school, and it was there was only a few people that were allowed to have that number. It was Macy something that I had that I wore to look cool, but it was really so my mom could get a hold of me when she needed to get a hold of me. That was the reason why I had a pager.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. Like, so mom would, hey, hold on, y'all. I got to go use this phone. I got to hit this dude back. Hey, mom.
Hey, mom. What's up? That's funny. Hey, mom.
No doubt. Quinn Kibler says, Driscoll, rank your top 5 new flavors. For me, Code Red is king. Also, the Thrashed Apple and Pitch Black are good. I've had two flavors of Mountain Dews I've tried. I've tried normal Mountain Dew and Diet Mountain Dew. My Diet Mountain Dew tastes terrible. So really, I'm a traditionalist. But again, I love Mountain Dew, but it's because of the sweetness. It's not so much that I'm like a Mountain Dew junkie where I've got to try all the different flavors. I'm also not a very experimental person when it comes to food. If I got something I like, there's no need to try something new. You know what I mean? So like, why go to try the Code Red or whatever when I love the original? And I'm also trying to not talk about Mountain Dew as much anymore, because whenever I talk about it, I want it. And I'm trying to not drink it right now. So here's an interesting one, Ryan. From Robert McReynolds, what do you think about pulling someone from the Kyle Shanahan tree if Reese goes to Alabama?
I mean, I love that system, but I think that there's been sporadic success with it, though. I'll say that. I think that goes for the Sean McVay tree, too, right? There's been some hits. Like, I think Mike McDaniel is a really good offensive guy in at the Miami Dolphins, for instance, right? But I don't think Matt LaFleur – it's Matt LaFleur that was in the Jets, right? He's not Mike LaFleur. It's Matt LaFleur,
yes,
right? Yeah.
Yes.
So Matt LaFleur with the Jets did not do a good job, right? Mike LaFleur was pretty good. You know,
it's the other way around. Matt LaFleur is the guy that's now with the Packers.
Okay. So then Mike LaFleur is
right.
He was with the Jets and he just got let go. Yeah. So the Jets version of LaFleur, not too great, right? And there's some good, there's some bad. I like the opinion of, let's go after that system potentially. Like, I would think about it, because I think that system is very versatile. I think it's a system that, you know, you can create a lot of mismatches. You can get in space a little bit. And I think Notre Dame has needed to do that a little bit more over the last couple of years, right? So, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it. It's just who's the guy, right? Like, I care more about the person than the fact that he came from the tree. I need to talk to him. You know what I mean?
I think the tree matters to me from the standpoint of you came from here, let's talk.
Right.
And that's what you're saying, right? Like, so, but I think that's where I would say, yes, Ryan, you and I are agreement. Like, the tree would fit really well at Notre Dame. But as we've seen with a lot of other times, some guys from a tree work well. Put it like this, Ryan, I'll ask you this. Okay. Who is a better coach, Bill Belichick or Mike Holmgren?
Bill Belichick. Yeah.
Okay. Who's had the better success producing NFL coaches? Mike Holmgren?
Mike Holmgren.
Or bingo. Right? Yeah. So
well, that one staff was ridiculous, the Packers, man. With John Gruden, Steve Mariucci, Andy Reid. Like, yes. It was wild. Yeah, it was wild.
When you had Fritz Schirmer was the D coordinator. He was never a head coach guy, but he was considered a great defensive coordinator back in the day. So, yeah, I mean, that was a great, great staff that he had back then. You know, Marty Morningwig, I think, was on that. Was worked for him for a while too. So, I mean, now Marty Morningwig wasn't as successful as those other guys, but yeah, they had some very good. Sherm Lewis was his offensive coordinator. So, I mean, he had some very, very good coaches. Dick Geron was his defensive backs coach.
Oh, Dick Geron. Good one.
Yeah.
I haven't heard his name in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he had some really, really good staffs. He had some really good staffs back then. So, you know, yeah, I mean, those are things you look at and you say, boy, this guy had a much better success record producing those types of coaches. And where Bill Belichick, the tree was not as successful as the one that Mike Holmgren had with the Packers. And I don't know if it was the same when he was with the Seahawks. I don't know if there was the same success or not, Ryan. I'd have to go back and look.
I don't even remember who's on there, to be honest. Yeah. I don't remember.
I'd have to go back and look at some of those teams, but what years was he with Seattle? Started in what, 99? So 99 was his first year there. So yeah, I mean, I'd have to go back and look at some of those teams, but he had some success there, but not quite the level of success that he had, obviously, with the Packers, because they got to a Super Bowl but didn't win one.
Right. Not to move from the conversation, Brian, because I could do this all day, because that staff was just ridiculous. Can I just say, I saw someone in the chat talking about, you know, they're saying that the whole 2024 class is now gone without Tommy. I would just like to say you should go sign up at boards.irishbreakdown.com and you could see that there's a little bit of an intel conversation about.
Well,
it's all out there.
Who said that? I'm curious.
A couple different players. People have said that. Someone said CJD commits now. 25% of the class.
You tried to do this crap yesterday, man, and just stop. Okay, just stop. Let's be grownups. Okay. That's absurd. This happens every time a coach says, oh, they're going to lose all these other guys, blah, 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 blah. And it never happens. And as Ryan said, we already have an intel piece about this yesterday. So just chill out, okay?
Long as Notre Dame gets the right offensive coordinator, there should be no worries.
If they hired me as their offensive coordinator, they're going to lose some recruits. They hired some dude that works for some if they go hire some high school coach, they're going to lose some recruits. If they hire a good offensive coordinator, the kids are all going to stay.
They'll be fine. Yeah.
And so we don't need to do that. Oh, CJ Carr's going to decommit now. Just freaking stop. Right. Okay? Just stop. If he decommits at some point in time, then we'll address that. Okay? Sure. But let's just not be there. Let's just not play that game. Let's be better than that. Okay. Let's be better than that. Here's one for you, Ryan. I really want like to get your opinion on this.
Sure.
Just from Domer Grizz, please compare, contrast the games of Michael Mayer, Kyle Rudolph, and Tyler Eifert. Thank you.
I mean, they're completely different football players. I mean, so Domer Grizz, I'd rather just paint the picture of each player and then we could talk about some of the similarities, I guess, kind of after that. So Michael Mayer is a big, physically imposing dude who has surprising flexibility as a route runner, in my opinion. Like, there's some routes that he breaks off that are a little bit surprising, but he's incredibly competitive in the air, very competitive, strong hands. He's had some instances of just some concentration drops because he's, you know, just kind of starting to his momentum upfield and everything. But, I mean, the physicality that the dude plays with and the improvement in the run game, I thought, are substantial, and he's a very good football player. Kyle Rudolph is a guy that I don't think we ever saw the – all the upside that he could have had at Notre Dame with obviously the injury his final year. But Kyle Rudolph is just a massive dude. Incredible catch radius. He can win in the air. Catch point dude. Not a great blocker, but he has some effort in that department, at least at Notre Dame. That's what I saw. Tyler Eifert is very different, right? Like, he's a guy that you can just throw into the boundary. You can work outside the numbers. He can, you know, he's kind of a more of a flexible dude, you know, wins in the air. I think all three of those guys, the similarity is that they can win in the air and they have really good ball skills to make plays in a variety of ways. But I think that you just employ them a whole lot differently, in my opinion.
What is your preference, Ryan?
Was my style preference or the my yeah, preference? Like
if you were running the offense that you wanted to run, yeah. Your head coach, you've hired a coordinator to run the offense the way that you would want to run it. Which of those guys would you prefer? For me, honestly, it'd be Tyler Eifert.
I was going to say
Michael Mayer is the better player overall, sure. All around player. But I think Tyler Eifert is the guy that I think is the better fit for what I would want to do with the tight end.
Right. Yeah, mine's between Eifert and Mayer, actually, because I think that you can get a little bit more all around from Mayer. Obviously, a little more upside as a blocker, as long as he keeps improving. But I would say for me, like, I'm a big 12 personnel guy. I really do like two tight end sets. So in that regard, I think that I can get a lot out of the position as far as getting a player that can play in line and then also moving Tyler Eifert around a ton, right? So I think I would also lean Eifert, but I don't think Mayer is a wrong answer, obviously, because he can do a lot of different things and you can supplement production differently.
Here's another one for you, Ryan, from Bill Walsh. What offensive line player currently in Notre Dame, so not Jagasol, that's not named Blake Fisher or Joe Alt, is most likely to be drafted someday?
Most likely to get drafted someday. I mean, I think the first person that comes to mind, Bill, is Billy Shrouth. I think that he's a pretty easy one because the way, I mean, me and Brian talked about him a ton yesterday. He's a very interesting combination of size, physicality, and athleticism, right? I think when you look at like Zeke Correll would be someone that probably would be like, oh, maybe Zeke Correll get drafted. It's not impossible. But what I would say about Zeke Correll is that Zeke Correll isn't the biggest guy of all time, right? So there's going to be some NFL evaluators that are going to look at Zeke and say, is he a little smaller, maybe a little scheme specific? Like, you're going to use those types of terminologies with a guy like Zeke Correll. Billy Shrouth, I don't think he's a scheme dependent football player. Like, I could see him growing and being that 6'4", 310 plus pound offensive guard that could be in a power-based system, could be in a zone-based system, and can do a little bit of everything, right? So I think he's a guy that could get drafted if he develops properly. If Emil Wagner could put on enough weight and hold it, I mean, that kid's a high draft pick most likely if you get the most out of him because he's incredibly talented. So first two guys off my head were those. I think Billy Shrouth and I think Billy Shrouth and Emil Wagner definitely have that type of upside, but I think Billy's the cleanest one because you're like, he can already hold the weight, right? He can already hold the weight. He's really athletic. Emil's a little bit of a projection just because you just don't know how much weight he's going to be able to carry on his frame.
Sorry, I couldn't get back to here. I'm trying to publish that story and get it and all that kind of stuff. So
No, you're good.
Here's one from Sean Green. If you could choose, if you could only choose one road game on the 23 schedule to go to, which game would you choose? That's easy. It's Clemson for me.
Yes. I've never seen the running down the hill and all that type of stuff, cool. Right? Like that's pretty cool. Wild, man.
And in my limited experience with Clemson fans, they were pretty cool. They've been pretty cool. Yeah, like in person, they were very friendly and fun. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to meet them in the 2020 regular season game, but I ran into a bunch of them at the ACC title game. And then, of course, in the 2015 game when I was down at Clemson for that game. Really, they're a lot like Georgia fans. Like when they talk trash, it's like in good fun. It's not vulgar. It's not like going to an Ohio State game, you know, where their fans are just the worst. It's or Michigan fans. It's fun. It's like, oh, you know, you guys, you know, it's all in good fun. And I enjoyed it there. And man, they, the smells on campus at Clemson in Georgia when I went down there, even though the Clemson game was rainy, there were still people grilling and cooking.
It's wild.
And you're like, man, I couldn't imagine what it's like on like a sunny day. Right. So yeah, that was great. Well,
that's definitely one of the top couple places I want to visit. I really do. Because I'll also say I always go on this Clemson radio station. It's one that I like frequent, and there are some there's some fan bases, Brian, where like you go on and they disagree with the take that you say and they just get really mean, right? Like, yes. It's just like so disrespectful. Yes. I've never had that experience with a Clemson radio station. They're all very like, and even the guy that covers them is always just like, I really respect Notre Dame. Like, I think that they are going in a great direction. I really do think, because Clemson hasn't always been a blue blood, right? Like, they've had the build up and they've been that team that like understands lack of success. They understand building. So I think that there's some mutual respect in that regard.
Yeah. And I think the fact that Notre Dame has had some success against Clemson, I mean, look, Clemson, Notre Dame has beat Clemson, what is it, two times?
Two of the last three.
And then, you know, so what are they? They're Notre Dame's, are they 2-2? No, 2-3 against each other, right?
Yeah.
Notre Dame's 1-2, Clemson's 1-3. Well, two of those games weren't competitive, but the other three were. I mean, even the game Notre Dame lost in 2015, that was a game that Notre Dame had a chance to tie at the very end of the game.
Yeah.
So I think there's that too. I think that's partly why Georgia fans respect Notre Dame a lot more than Alabama fans. Part of it's because Alabama fans don't respect anybody. Some of them. But the other part is, well, Notre Dame's given Georgia a game both times they've played. So there's, you know, in Alabama, they've blown Notre Dame out both of the two times they've played. So that's going to factor into it as well.
Yeah.
Ryan.
That's the mutual respect conversation, right? It's like, we're the SEC team. You're Notre Dame that hasn't been relevant and blah, blah, blah. And then you went toe-to-toe with us and you punched us in the mouth, right? And you were in the game at the end. So I think that's the mutual respect. Yeah. I agree.
Yep. Here's an interesting one. Here's a recruiting question from Salty Virginia Peanuts. If Caleb Brewer commits to and plays tackle at Notre Dame, what with his tight end skills, could Notre Dame use things like tackle eligible plays? Also, please drool a bit on his potential. So the quick answer to that first one, Ryan, is yeah, absolutely.
Especially in the red zone, right?
He legit catches the football, right? So did Joe Alt.
Yes.
May never come to that situation, but I mean, yeah, I could see it. But Ryan, I know you and I are both extremely high on Caleb Brewer, and I don't care what his rankings say. That's a kid that's got a lot of talent. Like, Ryan sent me his film, his highlights first time he watched, and he was like, "Dude, you've got to watch this. This is just stupid." You know, and so I was like, "Okay, this is interesting." It was like 10:30 at night, and you're usually in bed by then too. So I was like, "Okay, this guy's pretty fired up by this guy." So
I don't know if you've noticed lately, though. I've been up a little bit later. Been up a little.
Yes, you have. I feel bad for you.
Salty, I think the first thing I said to Brian about Caleb Brewer was this highlight tape is silly. Like, it's silly. Yeah. Like, why is this happening right here, right? The first play at 6'5", 300 pounds, because he was legit like 295 last year. He obviously had to cut weight to make, you know, the 285 for wrestling this season. But he was a legit 295 getting a tight end screen on the first play of the game and going for like 40 yards. It's just like, why is this a thing right now? Like, why is this a possible? And he plays at Wild Missing. So, like, he's playing with, Javen Williams was the kid that came out of there that's going to Penn State, right? I mean, they play some good football teams.
By the way.
Yeah. Very talented kid.
That's a dude.
Yes. But Caleb Brewer, Salty, is, I mean, because you say drool about his potential, but it's hard not to, man. Like, honestly, he is 6'5", 300 pounds, and can move. I look forward to seeing what his arm length is, because I know there's going to be a conversation of, is he a tackle? Is he a guard? And that's usually kind of the determiner for most opportunities. But I mean, he's got such good foot quickness. I'm not really worried about it. Like, I think he's going to play tackle potentially on the college level. If not, he can be a dang good guard, right? I mean, there's just that type of upside. But he's just a really, really talented football player. Brian mentioned, you know, obviously, Joe Walt with a tight end background. Mike McGlinchey was another guy with a tight end background. Those guys tend to usually work out. Those guys that have the frames to put on that weight that are for tight ends, you know, like, I just love that foot quickness, man. Caleb Brewer is a very talented football player. And I would say this, year one, if you don't know if he's going to be more than a four-year player, let's say, if Caleb's that good, I mean, down near the goal line, you want to put an extra tackle in the game and get Caleb Brewer on the field? Like, heck yeah, baby. Let's do it. I'm all for it.
Brian, let's go to another one here. So Christopher Crosby, this is I want to bring this up for Mike Sullivan, because this is a really interesting dynamic.
Okay.
So this is said before this whole thing broke. He says, if Tom Reese goes to Bama, that has now happened, and has a bad year, it could be tough to rebound from. If he has a bad year at Notre Dame, people will blame the players. And the point being, at Alabama, they'll blame the coaches. And that is a very interesting dynamic. And it's, I mean, every fan base will blame both sides to a degree. But it has been weird watching Notre Dame fans the last 7 or 8 years where most of the time when things go wrong, it's almost always the players get blamed. And it's never the coaches, because I think that's the culture Brian Kelly created. It's never my fault. And therefore can never be one of my assistant coaches' fault, because if it's their fault, then it ultimately it's my fault. But if the players aren't good enough, that's a different conversation. And so you see all these excuses, well, I have good enough players, I can't recruit, blah, 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 right? At Alabama, it's no. Like players will get blamed, but you're going to get blamed even harder because you make the most money. And even right. in the NIL world, if the deal that I was told he's going to get is accurate, and again, he's not leaving for the money, but he's still going to get a big pay raise. Most of the players won't be making more money than him. Yes. So it's going to be if he thinks Notre Dame fans were pretty rabid after a loss, you know.
Oof. Yes. Especially if that loss is to like an Auburn or something like that. Right. Like,
yeah.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting, man. I mean, I wish Coach Reese success, right? Like, I hope he does a good job, but it's going to get tough if things aren't perfect, right? I mean, that's the expectation in Alabama, right? The expectation is to score 40 plus points a game and win national championships. And if he does, and if they don't, it's going to be a lot of the blame. There's no doubt.
Absolutely. Let's get to some more here. We got Christopher Crosby says, I live about 20 minutes from Springfield, Ohio. I've seen Aaron Scott. He's as advertised. Chances Mike Mickens can pull him out of Ohio. They're not great at this point in time. Notre Dame likes him. They're recruiting him hard, but it's one of those things where it's going to be a tough pull. It's going to be a really tough pull for me.
It is.
Yeah, but he likes Notre Dame a lot, and they're trying, but I just think getting him out of Ohio is going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I mean, I think Ohio State's kind of the team to beat for him right now. And
oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's going to be the case. That's going to be the case. All right, let's get to this next one here. So Indy Irish 25, this is a name we heard a lot. Is Brian Hartline ready if Tommy touchdown Tommy heads to Alabama? Well, obviously, he's heading to Alabama now. Look, Brian Hartline for me is not a guy that I'd go after. I know that some are going to say that's silly, but like, number one, he's been a coach. If you didn't think Tommy Reese was ready to be the offensive coordinator in 2019 or 20, what makes you think Brian Hartline's ready to be the offensive coordinator now?
Right.
Because he won't have a Ryan Day to help him at Ohio State the way that he does now. So look, he's been a great recruiter. There's no questioning his receiver coaching skills. But for me, Ryan, I mean, because that's evidenced by how well his receivers do the minute they get to the NFL. I mean, they Ohio State's as good as any team in the country. I would say better at their receivers getting the NFL and being ready to play right now at the present moment. Right now, the track record's not super long because he hasn't been there very long. But the Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave were far more technically ready to play as rookies than Jerry Jeudy was, or Henry Ruggs was, or Jalen Waddle was, in my opinion.
They both just had 1,000 yards as rookies, too.
Right.
So I know there's the extra game, but still.
Right. But they were significantly better, and I think it's going to continue. I think that's something that helped Jamison Williams thrive at Alabama last year, was the preparation he got beforehand. So I think Ohio State is at the point now where, you know, that's all great, but that's a whole different thing than being a coordinator where you're the guy completely in charge of the offense, because he's not going to be completely in charge of the offense at Ohio State. Ryan Day's still going to be there. Yep. So to me, I think that's kind of where I'm at, Ryan, is he would not be at the top of my list, to be honest with you. I want a guy that's done it before. A guy doesn't have to be 50 years old, but I want a guy that's done it before. And here's why. What I believed before Tommy Reese left is what I believe now. You got to just stop looking at the chat, because it's just going to make you mad.
It's the Wake Forest offensive coordinator thing, man. Yeah. Like, it just always gets me.
Here's the deal. What I believed about Tommy and this offense next year stays the same. I believe that the pieces are in place for this Notre Dame team to make a run if some things can go their way. I wholeheartedly believe that. I don't want a coordinator coming here learning on the job. I don't.
Yeah,
I want a guy that can come in here and has some level of a proven track record to say, you feel like this guy can get this thing going quickly, because I don't want to waste this window. You can't guarantee me you're going to be able to do that. Notre Dame wasted a window from 15 to 17 because of the foundation that was laid under Brian Van Gorder. They wasted a chance to compete for a championship in 2015 because they wasted the defensive coordinator and the strength program were both terrible, right? And so for me, Ryan, I don't want to waste this window because I don't know if you're going to get another one. You can't guarantee me you're going to get another window like this. And so I want to bring in a guy that I know can call, can design and call an offense and teach kids how to play football.
Yeah.
Could Brian Hartline in 4 years be a better offensive coordinator than Andy Ludwig, for example, a name we mentioned? Certainly. Yeah. Certainly. But I don't know that he'll be that next year, and I would bet against him being that next year.
That's fair.
And that's not even getting into the fact that why would he leave Ohio State, his alma mater, to come back to Notre Dame for the same job?
And can I say this? I don't know if, like, I saw this report, Brian, that so Hartline's getting the opportunity to kind of prove himself as a play caller like this offseason, and then it's like an evaluation to see if he's going to call the offense in the fall. Did you hear that? I was like, that's weird, man. Like that, I just find it weird that that's the situation when he's been on the staff. Like Ryan Day knows him obviously very well. I just thought that was kind of a weird dynamic. So, I mean, yeah, I'd rather have a proven guy because I still think there's other guys out there that you could just look at and say, like, you know, there's upside to him that's untouched, untapped, and more of a known commodity for sure.
Absolutely. Let's get to this next one, Ryan. I'll answer this one really quickly. Did from MGo Irish, did the Irish have any sincere interest in 2024 running back Jordan Marshall of Archbishop Moeller? Notre Dame was not in his top four. He dropped yesterday. No, they were never really interested in him. There was a level of interest early on, Ryan. He was at the camp this summer, and they've offered two backs from Irish Invasion. He's not one of them. And he was solid there, but Aeneas Williams moved at a different level than Jordan Williams. Darian Dupree moved at a little different level than Jordan Marshall, I should say. So he's a good back. He's a four-star back for me. He's a good player. I just feel like there was better players on the board for Notre Dame in this class. And that's why they just never really made a move on him. And they'd have had a shot with him, right? If they'd have taken him, but they didn't really make that move. I'm just gonna read this, Ryan, and I want to get your reaction. Christopher Crosby, can you think of a stranger combination of coaches than Luke Fickell and Phil Longo? I don't see how that works. It seems odd to me. 1, 2, 3, go.
I mean, I don't even think it's really like Luke Fickell and Phil Longo as much as it is the air raid in Wisconsin, right? Like that's the weird part. I mean, I honestly could see Luke Fickell with an air raid coach. Like, I don't think that that's like the weird part where I'm just like, that is stupid. That doesn't make any sense, right? But it's the fact that you're going to Wisconsin that has traditionally, for as long as I can remember, and as long as most people probably can remember, has been a power running team, right? Like, they are running downhill and they are running right at you. And then all of a sudden you're going to bring in an air raid offense to take you to the next step. Like, I just think it's very odd. It's very odd. So in that regard, yeah, I guess it's a very weird pairing because, I mean, just that the fact that Luke Fickell is now the coach of Wisconsin, and you would just consider like, hey, he's going to continue doing what Wisconsin has traditionally done as a offensive football team. Now you throw in that Phil Longo is his offensive coordinator. That's the weirdest thing, man. Wisconsin with an air raid. It's just wildly weird. Wildly weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. I just, I don't get it. And I think you nailed it, Ryan. The Longo to him theory is nice. Look, there's a lot of people joining the show right now because of the Tom Maurice thing. We'll address that here in a minute. This is more of a mailbag show. We are going to get into that here in a few. But, Ryan, you and I are also going to do a show tonight at 8 o'clock where we will talk. So here's what we'll do tonight. We're going to go into more detail about the whole Reese thing, kind of the backstory, and then we'll dive into some of the candidates that we like. We'll dive into some of those guys and we'll try to gather some intel between now and then as well. There'll be a lot more to that. Is Dan from Gavin Hard, is Dan Mullen a call you would make? Not for me. No. Personality wise. And honestly, here's one of the advantages of a guy like Andy Lugwood, he's a lifer assistant.
Yeah.
He's 58. He's not going to get a head coaching job, right? That's just not kind of to me where he is. He's an assistant coach. Dan right. Mullen's going to come to Notre Dame if that were to happen. And the first chance he gets to leave to be head coach, he's going to take. And so that's fine. But how invested is he going to be in recruiting? Because a guy like that, here's why. A guy like that knows if I bust my tail to recruit here, that means I'm recruiting against myself when I get a job in a year or two. That's the reality of it, subconsciously or consciously. And they're just not going to do that. The troll sniper said, sucks that Phil Longo just signed a contract with Wisconsin. He would have been perfect. I like what Phil Longo does. I think he does a lot of good things at Wisconsin, or I mean at North Carolina. That's not a fit for Notre Dame for a lot of the same reasons. I don't think he's going to be a fit at Wisconsin. He runs a very passive rushing attack, yep. And I just don't think that that system would work incredibly well at Notre Dame.
And can we please stop with Josh Gattis, please? I really don't want to talk about Josh Gattis ever again in this chat, folks.
Can you just speak on that a little bit? So for me, here's why, right? To me, yeah. I think it was a good position coach and a good recruiter. That was sure. A very overrated coordinator. And the dumpster fire that his offense was at Miami this year kind of set it. See, at Michigan, he had Jim Harbaugh kind of setting the tone. Jim Harbaugh was for that offense what Brian Kelly was for the Notre Dame offense. Yeah, you may be the OC, but we're going to do it my way, and they're going to have that influence. And Jim Harbaugh is even more involved in the offense than Kelly was in the end of his career at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
So that was still Jim Harbaugh's offense, which is why this year's offense looked exactly the same as last year's offense.
100%.
That's what it is for me with Gattis. Yep.
That's so, it. I mean, that's it. I don't have proof that he's a great offensive coordinator. I just don't have any proof on it. And I mean, the fact that he was fired after 1 year at Miami, I think is very telling for a lot of different reasons, right? Like, it's not just the fact that he isn't good. It's also the fact of, like, there's got to be some cause for why that ended so abruptly, right? Yeah. In a transitional year. So we'll leave it at that.
We're going to work through some super chats here, and then we're going to get out of here. Cause again, tonight at 8 o'clock, we are going to go live again, and we're going to break this all down. So we're going to kind of skip over a lot of the questions about coaches that we would look at, because we're going to discuss a lot of that tonight. So we'll answer your questions about guys that you like as well. So I want to kind of, because there's some really good questions we're going to miss here, guys, but I really, guys and gals, but I really want to get to the super chat so we can get going and start. Cause I want, honestly, I need to get on the phone and start like doing some diving into kind of what's next and all that kind of stuff. Charlie Weiss, last belt loop, said, speaking of violence in sports, that's why I love Drake Bowen. That kid brings violence when he hits someone. Imagine Drake and Snead hanging a kid. Wow. I agree with you completely.
Yes.
I'm going to see you. So I'm going to add some to that though. Part of the reason I love Jaden Osbury is because he's that way as well, but he's not as big and strong as Drake is now.
Right.
When Jaden Osbury gets into a college weight room, I think that kid's going to be an absolute monster. Physically, because he brings a lot of violence now in a 205-pound frame. When he gets up to 225, and that's why I compare him to John Vilma, I don't see Jaden Osbury. I hope he's never like a 235, 240 guy. That's going to be too big.
Nah,
but if he can get in that like 225, tops out at 230, he's going to come with some force. And I'm telling you, that kid, those two kids, a year after getting Ziegler and Jalen Snead, boy, the linebacker position is in a great position. It really
sure
is.
Sure is.
I'm going to somewhat address this one. Look, Tyler Smith, the super chat, start one, bench one, cut one. I'm not cutting any of them. If I could start one and bench one, I mean, look, here's the great thing about this question. I don't have to do any of those things, those last two things. I don't have to bench either one, any of them, or I don't have to cut any of them. And, you know, why would I want to start any of them, and why would I bench them? They're three really talented running backs. I'm going to use all of them.
Yes.
And play all of them. So it's a little bit of a cop-out answer, Tyler. I apologize for that. But the reality is I'm not going to tell you who I'd cut. And I don't, I'm just glad we don't have to make that decision, because you can use all of them. And I'd say the best games Notre Dame had this year offensively were games where all three of those guys were making plays.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody can argue that either. Like that's I mean, the proof's in the pudding in that one.
Exactly. Exactly. Got a super chat here from Not Ryan's Bully, aka Tommy Guns. I dislike all Tommies right now. Good luck to him, I guess. Except for you, Tommy. We don't dislike you.
Hate all Tommies. Just kidding.
Hey. Be kidding. Nice.
I was
John A1 says, is Mike Denbrock a guy Coach Freeman should call? I'll say I love Mike Denbrock. He's one of my favorite people in the business, and he's a good offensive coordinator. But I don't think it fits because of the way the current staff is made up. Because he's not a quarterback's coach. He's a receivers, tight ends, or tight ends, tackles coach. And he's not a guy that I'd have coaching quarterbacks. And right now, with the way the staff is made up, the biggest priority for me, if I'm Marcus Freeman, is the Dylan McCullough, Harry Heistand, Chancey Stuckey, Jared Parker. I want to keep as many of those guys in place as possible. Harry Heistand being at the top of that list.
Right.
And so I want to bring in a coordinator that can work with the guys that I have, because I've got a great offensive assistant coaching staff. If I can give me a really good offensive coordinator to work with those guys, it's going to be phenomenal. So as much as I love Mike Denbrock as a person, as good of a coach as I think that he is, I don't think the fit is right. That's why, you know, when we talk tonight, we won't be talking about Alex Atkins from Florida State, because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit player wise, you know, as or staff wise. Doesn't make a lot of sense there, even though we like some of the stuff that he does. There's other guys that we could talk about. Jeff Grimes is a guy that a lot of people want to talk about. Doesn't make sense. He's an offensive line guy. So it doesn't make sense to bring him as an offensive coordinator. I think he's a little bit overrated as an offensive coordinator. I mean, they've had some good offenses at Baylor, but he hasn't shown me they can be an elite offensive coordinator. So I guess not overrated, but just not worth some of the hype that people have about him. But even if he was, Ryan, it doesn't fit, because then you got to get rid of Harry Hiestand. And give me Harry Hiestand and whoever else you want as offensive coordinator over Jeff Grimes coaching offensive line and whoever you're going to hire to be your quarterback's coach. I'll take the Harry Hiestand combination every day of the week. Mark one, Brian, do you have your resume ready? So the only person that I care about employing me is myself, and I don't need to give myself a resume. I love what I do, and there's no way that Notre Dame would consider my resume anyway, nor should they. Because I have not coached in forever, and I have always said I would never give my resume to Notre Dame while I'm doing a job like this, because it would create so many problems. So then if you all knew that I applied for a job, let's say I applied for an analyst position, hypothetically, and I didn't get it. Every time I criticized the coaching staff on offense or Marcus Freeman, it would be like, man, you're just saying that because he didn't hire you. And so it would just be such a bad idea and a bad look. So the only time I ever sent a resume to Notre Dame was when I was in coaching, and I sent one for like a GA position that I knew I wasn't going to hear back from. So yeah, that's not one that I would ever do. And I like what I do here. I don't know why Mark's trying to get rid of me, Ryan. It kind of makes me sad. Mark's trying to get rid of me. I'm just kidding. Tyler Reese says, feel like we can't catch a break. Definitely a big loss for us. Freeman has a tall task in front of him. Thank you for the super, Tyler. It's a loss, but I don't think it's a big loss. And I think it's a loss that you can overcome. There's a lot of good candidates. I mean, Ryan and I had this talk last night. Like, there's some guys on there. Like, boy, if they brought this guy in, I'd be pretty fired up. Gee, I wish they could make this guy work, because there's some good guys out there. And the pieces are in place for this thing to really get rocking and rolling, in my opinion, Ryan. I really do believe that. Let manager one. I got to admit, I do love the idea of Tommy running up the score on LSU this year. How phenomenal was that? Would that be? Like, I know one game I'm rooting for Tommy Reese like crazy, man.
I would love to see the post game between him and Brian Kelly. That'd be fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Adam Shipley with a super chat. Thank you, Adam. What does Reese leaving do to your projections for the record and development? It is affected by them having to install a new offense. Adam, honestly, I have to see who they hire first. That's a very fair question. Very fair question. But I can't honestly answer it until I see who they have. You know, because there could be a scenario where, like, boy, that's a pretty smooth transition. And others where I'm like, you hired the dude from Western Kentucky who's at Oregon now, I think, right? Or I forget where he is. I think he's at Oregon now. Or no, Will Stein's at Oregon. Yeah, but I forget where the Western Kentucky guy is at now. But I'm like, dude, that guy's an air raid. That's a completely different offense than what you're doing now. Yeah. And so I just don't think that would make it as much sense. I'm going to bring this up because it's a super chat, Ryan, from Blake Kajar. Would you go after Ryan Grubb and Josh Gattis? We've already addressed Gattis. What's the other one?
Ryan Grubb just turned down Alabama, so I just don't know if he's on the market, right? Like, I mean, I would think about it, but I just don't know if he's a guy that would have an interest of leaving. Like, if he didn't want to leave for Alabama, I'm not so sure he wants to leave, in my opinion, this time.
I'd make a call.
Sure.
Because I love Kalen DeBoer's offense, and I think you could transition to it well at Notre Dame. But, you're right. I mean, you make the call, just see if there's – because maybe he just doesn't want to go to the Southeast. Maybe he doesn't want to work with Saban. Maybe he doesn't want to go to Bama, but he'd be open for a better opportunity somewhere else. Maybe that's it. So you at least make the call, right? But I think I think that's kind of where I would be. Jay Clampett Investment. So now that it's official, who is on your short list? I'm really intrigued by the dude in Utah. So that's Andy Ludwig. We're definitely going to talk a lot more about Andy Ludwig, Jay Clampett. We're going to do a show tonight at 8 p.m. where we're going to kind of talk about everything and then dive into sort of what is our list tonight. That'll be at 8 o'clock tonight. So definitely want to tune back in for that one. And we'll have a lot to say about that. Mark one says, just in, Saban got Tommy on his boat, seeing if he knows how to water ski. Well played. Mike Farina with a super chat. Thank you, Mike. To clarify, with Hartline calling plays in the spring, essentially, unless it goes horribly, he is expected to call plays next year. They're just hedging. That's fine, Mike. But my point is, he's not going to be the only guy in the room on offense. That's kind of where I'm coming from, right? Whether he calls plays or not. I never say anything about he's not going to call plays. I didn't say that. What I said is he's not the guy driving the offense. Brian Hartline doesn't come in there and say, hey, Ryan, I'm going to run this offense next year. It's different from what you ran, but I'm going to run. No, he can't do that. He's running the offense that Ryan Day is saying, here's my offense, go run it. I mean, right. He's going to put some wrinkles on it, as every coordinator does, but he's running Ryan Day's offense. And if Ryan Day doesn't like it, he's going to tweak it. And trust me, Ryan Day is going to have plenty of opinions about the offense. He just, that's just, it's, and he should. I mean, why shouldn't he? So
he was talking about my comment, because I just think that it's a little telling that he's not getting like the full reign right now. Like, it's a test period. I think that that's a little like fishy in my opinion. So
I gotcha. But yeah. I think part of that's because, in my opinion, if I'm Ryan Day, I'd rather do it that way. And then you prove to me you can handle it. And then I hand it over to you, as opposed to me giving you full reign. Spring doesn't go well. And then I've got to then come in and, you know what I mean? Right. So like, to me, it's that. It's, let's start here, and then if you are what I think you are, then I can back off further. And then that, the perception is, wow, he did so well that Ryan Day's completely handing off. Or if the opposite happens, you're like, I need to be a little bit more involved than I thought I was going to be. Then that gives the perception that Brian Hartline's not ready or not capable. So I get where Mike's coming from. And it is a little fishy. It tells me that he's not sure if he's ready or not yet, because he's not sure if he's ready to be a full-time guy, which is my whole point. At Ohio State, you can get away with that because you've got a great resource in your head coach. Marcus Freeman is on record as saying, I'm not an offensive guy. So you don't have that same resource that you have at Ohio State. It's a different, now the defensive coordinator will have that resource at Notre Dame, but the offensive coordinator doesn't. And that's the point. And that's why Brian Hartline would not be a guy I would bring in. It makes a lot more sense at Ohio State than it does at Notre Dame, in my opinion. And that's where I'm coming from. Connor Grant said, would you prefer a better X's and O's guy or an amazing recruiter if you had to choose? If I can only have one of those two things, give me the amazing X's and O's guy as the coordinator. Now, position coach is different, Ryan. Yeah. As a coordinator, because if the X's and O's are amazing, you know, then my offense is going to speak for itself. And that's going to help with the recruit. And then I can go hire, we can hire assistant coaches that are great recruiters. Mm-hmm. So yes, I would rather.
Especially with where your staff is right now from a recruiting perspective on the offensive side of the football. I agree.
Exactly. Mark One says, it was a compliment, Brian, on the resume. I know, buddy. I'm just giving you a hard time. But I have actually gotten that question seriously from other people. And I just want to explain to people why I would never do that. Number one, if I was Marcus Freeman, I wouldn't hire me, right? Because of the fact that I haven't coached in almost a decade. But number two, it would create a ton of conflicts of interest, in my opinion. But I have had some people that have asked that. Mark, I knew you were just kind of being fun and giving me a compliment, and I do greatly appreciate that. I believe this is the last super chat that we have, Ryan, and this is from Beefeater. It says, how much of last year's bad offensive plays were due to Tommy's play calling versus poor execution of Pine checking out of the play called? Well, Pine rarely checked out of the plays last year.
Right.
I think a lot of last year's success, as we have said, was down to poor execution. I mean, we've said this all along. You had guys, even in bad games where I didn't like Tommy's game plan, there were still guys coming open that the quarterback wasn't throwing the ball to that would have resulted in it, because it wasn't just Drew Pine, because it was Tyler Buchner against Marshall. Whether it's Buchner against Marshall and then Drew Pine against Stanford, the quarterbacks weren't getting the ball out to open guys. Right. If Tyler Buchner hits Braden Lindsay on a wide open post route at the end of the second quarter, Notre Dame wins. If Tyler Buchner reads the corner correctly on a third down play that led to, I think, a field goal against Marshall, and Notre Dame wins. They're up 15-2. You remember 15-12. Remember the play I'm talking about? It was like a third down play. The corner squats. Braden converts it to a go route. There's no help over the top. If Tyler reads that correctly, it's one of the easiest touchdown passes he'll ever throw. And it's now all of a sudden 22-12, and it's ball game. Right. Okay, you can maybe say the coach didn't do a good enough job teaching Tyler that conversion, but you can't tell me that it was a bad play call, right? And so he's the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach, so it's up to him to teach those guys how to do that. So there's some of that. But as we said before, even in some of the bad games, there's guys running wide open that the quarterback won't throw the ball to. So it was mostly about, to me, if you want to criticize Tommy Rees, play calling isn't really the area I would go with. Now, I was, use more run games. We've had some of those criticisms, but the play calling was good enough for you to win every game you played this year in the regular season. The execution wasn't there. That's also part of the coordinator's job. That's where he had to get better, was getting certain parts of the offense to execute better. The play calling by itself, just outside of all the other aspects that go into the success of the play calling, he was designing plays to get guys open every game. Ohio State, Marshall, Stanford, USC, all of them. So, but that's only one part of a, of being a great coordinator. And that's what we've always said. That part I've never had a problem with, Tommy. It's some of the other stubbornness things that we have a little bit of a, more of an issue with.
Yep.
Last one from Adam Shipley. Thank you, Adam. Looking forward to 8 p.m. Me too. It's going to be a busy couple hours. I got to go make spaghetti sauce tonight too, Ryan. I promised my wife that we would I would make spaghetti tonight. So I got to go make some spaghetti sauce here in a little bit and get rocking and rolling. But I do want to thank everybody for being with us today. Very lively chat today. A lot of great questions. I wish we could have got to more, but if y'all want me to have more intel tonight when we do it at 8 o'clock, I need to get off there now and go start making some phone calls. So anyway, that's going to be it, everybody. I want to thank y'all so much for being on with us today. Have a great rest of your day. Hey, 5 o'clock, we're going to have the rapid fire with Vince and Sean. They're going to talk about, obviously, a little bit about this Reese stuff. And then at 8 o'clock, Ryan and I will be live, 8 o'clock Eastern. Ryan and I will go live again to talk about just – you know, this move and kind of where Notre Dame goes from here and then kind of what's next for Notre Dame. And then we'll go from there. So have a great day, everybody. We'll get here with you all here very soon on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.